concept of kithra, meaning that these numbers in these narrations, they do not mean the numbers per se. They are referring to the kithra, to the abundance of the reward for visiting Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam or other imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. The other point is that, because I also refer to some people ask why visiting Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam is compared to Hajj. Is it more important than Hajj? The answer is that, again, we need to take into consideration different points. First of all, this comparison is not between recommended ziyarah and the obligation of Hajj.
Yes.
So if you are mustatir, if you are able to go to Hajj, it is an obligation upon you. You cannot claim that, okay, I go to ziyarah of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the reward is like 20 Hajj, then I'm not in need of going to Hajj. No, for sure you would be punished for abandoning Hajj. And we have so many narrations about the significance of Hajj.
Yes.
So it is not, I mean, these narrations are not talking about abandoning Hajj as an obligation and paying attention to
Imam al-Husayn
alayhi salam. No, Hajj is an obligation. Ziyarah is mustahab, is recommended. Yes. This is one point. The other point is that, because sometimes the Sunnis and, I mean, our Sunni brothers ask these questions, and sometimes the Wahhabis, they attack the Shia that you claim that ziyarah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is equal to 10 Hajj, for example. But the point is that when we take into consideration the narrations in both Shia and Sunni sources, we have many other examples in which the reward of an action is compared to Hajj, or even to martyrs. For example, qada'u hajat al-mu'min. If you fulfill the request of your brother in faith, for example, it is better than 20 Hajj.
Yes.
And we have it in both Shia and Sunni collections. Or if you do this action, it is better than the reward of, 10 martyrs, for example. Does it mean that this is more important than martyrdom? Not necessarily. Yes. So
these are encouraging recommendations.
Exactly, that's exactly the point. That these narrations are encouraging the people and to pay attention to that concept. And it's not belittling the importance of Hajj, it's not belittling the importance of martyrdom and shahada. And of course, for ziyarah of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, we have another important message taken from all these narrations, because the number of the narrations about the importance of ziyarah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is very significant. If people refer to books like Kamil al-Ziyarat, we are astonished about the greatness of the rewards. So it seems that the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam tried to give this message for showing the reward for ziyarah to take lesson from Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his tragedy. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam's main message is to rise against oppression, and this cannot be taken lightly.
Yes.
Many revolutions in the world, in the history of Islam, are inspired by the revolution of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam and his uprising, including the Islamic revolution of Iran. So Imams are encouraging the Shia, the Muslims, to visit Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam to, give them the opportunity to take lessons from the message of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam's uprising. To put it in a nutshell, the answer to the question of the today's program, is visiting Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam more important than visiting Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam? We have some narrations, but it seems that these narrations are talking about some specific times and eras. As I mentioned, there are two or three possibilities. For example, at that time, maybe people did not pay attention to the ziyarah of Imam Ridha alayhi salam. So to encourage the Shia, the Imams told them that in this time and era, it is more important, it has more reward to visit Imam Ridha alayhi salam. And maybe the other possibility is that if you visit Imam Ridha alayhi salam, then it is a sign of you being a twelver. But all in all, when we put together all the narrations, the conclusion is that the significance which has been given to Imam Hussein alayhi salam is much more than visiting other Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And as I mentioned, it has many reasons. One of them is taking lessons from the tragedy of Karbala and uprising of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Okay, thank you very much, Shaykh, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, what is one of the ways of being able to control ourself in our Islamic lifestyle? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is a pleasure to be here at your service, dear friends. We are talking about what is one of the things that we can do in order to fight ourselves in this struggle against the nafs when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. Now, as many of you know, a part and parcel of a Islamic lifestyle is to be able to attain perfection and to attain what is known as this kamal, this perfection, this magnificence that comes about when one attains higher levels of purification, both spiritual and physical. So in order to attain that kind of a Islamic lifestyle where, you know, we attain both physical and spiritual purification, of course, we are going to have to struggle against our base desires. Now, these base desires are manifested in worldliness. It is manifested in these kind of temporary worldly pleasures. Many books have been written about this, and so it is highly encouraged that one goes and reads these books that deal with this kind of, you know, ethical and moral, which is known as akhlaq in the Arabic. And these books on akhlaq are really very precious and necessary if we want to live a Islamic lifestyle. So what is one of the things that we can do in order to struggle against our base desires, our carnal desires, this insatiable greed for worldly pleasures? Well, it's interesting, the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, gives us two things that we can do, which we will talk about after the break. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we were talking about the two things that we can do in order to be able to fight and struggle against ourselves, our carnal self, which pushes one towards an insatiable greed for worldly pleasures and worldly material things. Now, as we have said in previous programs, there's nothing wrong with using and taking advantage of and benefiting from these worldly things in a balanced manner. It is when they go out of balance and out of control that we start to go towards trouble. Now, the two things that the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, has taught us, which will help us to be able to control ourselves, is to reduce the amount of food and drink that we intake. And in return, if we reduce the amount of food and drink that we intake, the angels will come and protect us, and Shaitan, the accursed enemy of humanity, will flee from us. He will run away from us. And so it's very interesting here, we find that overindulgence in food and drink will therefore have the opposite results, meaning that Shaitan will come towards us and the angels won't protect us as much as when we reduce the amount of food and drink that we intake. Now, of course, this is done with the intention to gain nearness to the Almighty Allah. And of course, this is a gradual reduction in food and drink. It's interesting, in other traditions we find that, for example, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said to only eat when you are hungry and to only drink when you are thirsty. Now, of course, you know, we need to keep certain medical principles in line. We're not asking anybody to starve to death or to die of thirst. No, this means that we should not overindulge in these things. And if we are able to reduce the amount of food and drink that we are intaking, then it will make it just a little bit easier to be able to struggle against the self and attain a higher level of spirituality and purification, which will lead, of course, to that pure and blessed Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
The Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps Aerospace Force has successfully put the Nur 3 satellite into orbit. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more.
Thank you.
Rest TV noted, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, Aerospace Force, successfully launched the homegrown imaging satellite, Nur 3, into orbit recently. Nur 3, meaning Light 3, was launched by satellite carrier Qased Messenger and was placed into an orbit 450 kilometers above the Earth's surface. Minister of Communications and Information Technology Isa Zarepour said via X, formerly known as Twitter, "With the efforts of IRGC Aerospace Force specialist, a few moments ago, the Nur 3 imaging satellite was successfully placed into a 450 kilometers orbit of the Earth with the Iranian Qased satellite carrier. I congratulate all Iranian people, those active in the country's space industry, and the IRGC's space experts for this success. God willing, this year will be a fruitful year for the country's space industry." Last month, Iranian Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani announced that the country would launch at least two domestically made satellites into orbit this year. Ashtiani said on August 22nd, "We are involved in the development and launch of satellites. Under our plan, we will have 2 to 3 satellite launches this year, something we hope to be successful." Despite sanctions imposed by Western countries in recent years, Iran has managed to take giant strides in the civilian space program. It is among the world's top 10 countries capable of developing and launching satellites. Back in March last year, the IRGC Aerospace Force launched Nur 2 into orbit using the Qased satellite carrier 2 years after it placed Nur 1 into orbit. Meanwhile, Tasnim News Agency wrote, "The president of Iran hailed the successful launch of the Nur 3 satellite into orbit as both a national victory and proof that the enemy's sanctions and threats have ended in failure." In a message recently, Sayed Ebrahim Raisi offered his congratulations to the Iranian nation and space experts of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, on the successful production and launch of the Nur 3 imaging satellite and thanked all those who played a role in this achievement. He said the launch was a national success and the result of his administration's attention to the country's space industry. "It once again proved that the enemy's sanctions and threats have no impact on the determination of Iranian experts and scientists to tread the path of progress." The Iranian president also called on the Ministry of Telecommunications and Information Technology as well as the Iranian Space Agency to continue to pave the way for further progress of the country's space industry. The IRGC Aerospace Force successfully launched the homegrown imaging satellite Nur 3 into orbit. Recently, Nur 3 was launched by satellite carrier and was placed into orbit 450 kilometers above the Earth's surface. Despite sanctions imposed by Western countries in recent years, Iran has managed to take giant strides in the civilian space program. It is among the world's top 10 countries capable of developing and launching satellites. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera English wrote in this regard, "Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps has successfully put a third satellite into orbit, according to officials. Two officials confirmed recently that the Aerospace Division of the Elite Military Force has put the third version of the imaging satellite Nur, which means light in Persian, into orbit. The Nord 3 was reportedly placed in an orbit 450 kilometers from the surface of the Earth and, like its predecessors, was taken to space using a Qasid, meaning messenger carrier developed by the IRGC. Al Jazeera English added, Western officials did not immediately comment on the launch recently. The first version of the Nur was successfully launched in April 2020 into an orbit 425 kilometers above the Earth. It became the first military reconnaissance satellite launched by Iran after several attempts. The second version reached an orbit of 500 kilometers in early 2022 using the mixed fuel carrier. Despite criticism from the West, Iranian officials have promised to carry on with the expanding satellite program and are expected to launch several more satellites into different orbits in the foreseeable future. In August 2022, an Iranian-owned and Russian-built satellite said to be capable of taking high-resolution images was successfully launched from a base in Kazakhstan. Al Jazeera English continued, Western countries have claimed the development of Iranian satellites may violate a United Nations Security Council resolution underpinning the country's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. Iran has repeatedly dismissed such claims, maintaining that its nuclear program is entirely peaceful. The nuclear deal, formally known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, continues to be in limbo after the United States unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed harsh sanctions on Iran. Iranian officials have recently suggested again that they are open to returning to the accord, but would first need to see political resolve from the Western parties, which also include France, Germany, and the UK.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaam alaikum. This is IRIB English Radio and you are listening to Youth Station. I am Zahra and I am here with my co-host
Zainab. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, and also Assalamu alaikum, Sister Zahra.
So today we want to talk about people who share their best image with others. More than people, we want to talk about how it is that we always tend to show our best side to others, our achievements, our improvements. And we tend to, obviously, never show those little failures, those
flaws that we have.
Right.
To others.
And the results this has on everybody else, on people's mentalities, on their feelings about themselves.
So I'm really excited. Let's get explore this topic.
Mm-hmm. So what experiences have you had about people sharing their best side, their best image of themselves to other people and the potentially negative results it's had on their surroundings?
Well, I think I have seen that a lot when it comes to relationships. I mean, when you're looking for a partner, everyone tries to show the other party that the only best sides. You never show the real picture of yours. Like, that naturally even happens. But after that, you got to be accepting all the sides you are looking. You should be, if the worst part is not that worst, If you can cope up with it, then you should. If it's really dangerous, then, you know, these relationships can even break. So we got to be very careful showing our real side, our real picture in the very beginning before we, you know, enter into a very mutual relationship for future.
Even in relationships that do exist, the influences that other than a relationship that wants to form, a relationship that has formed, that can be influenced by these kinds of images by other people, is I've seen in some situations where people who don't even necessarily have that amazing of a relationship, but they always post the best pictures, the best videos. I love you. This is my best friend in the world.
Yeah.
We have no problems. We're perfect.
You're full of problems.
Yeah. And they share these kinds of things. And on the other side, somebody who doesn't have like a proper understanding that, you know, everybody has difficulties and everybody has problems, and it's just a natural aspect of
life.
That
way you're actually making their problems a little more, you're zooming into them, and they start, again, comparing their lives with yours.
Right, right. Like those people who don't realize that, look back in their own lives and they're like, well, why are my relationships not that good?
Exactly.
How come somebody has the best things in the world and I don't?
Right.
And so it can cause jealousy and maybe even hatred. And what are your thoughts on this?
Exactly. It only not only causes a jealousy and hatred. Also, the person looking at the best picture of the others feels you are developing a low self-esteem in them. You're actually breaking their self-esteem. You're not boosting it if you're sharing some best part of your story, because sometimes, you know, like, there are people in my audience, there are people in my contact list who do not have what I have. So stop sharing my best picture or my achievements or, you know, what I have, because maybe this is no way going to boost their self-confidence. And maybe that, again, as you said, hatred or something is going to happen.
Right. So let's take a quick break and we'll be back with you guys soon. Welcome back. You are listening to Youth Station. I am Zahra and my co-host
Zaina, and we are exploring on the topic
sharing your best picture and your best side with others, and leaving
rather than entering the real you,
right, and leaving making other people think your life and everything you have is just perfect.
What happens very common, especially I would say when you get married, the men try to show that they're very organized, they're very much in order. But when you get married and then you see, where does this man take out his socks? Where does he put his? This is pretty tangible. That's, you know, that's why I'm right. Using this example.
Socks are something everybody knows.
Yeah. And, oh my God, what is this? What was the order? What was the sequence that I saw before marriage in him? And what is it now? Why is he always waiting for me to pick up his clothes and, you know, put them in the hangers or in the cupboard? It's like that real picture is something that's also remains hidden. I won't say always with intention, but sometimes, like, if you can show as much as possible the way you are, you should show it. If you're not an organized person,
be honest.
Try to say another person that, look, I have problem with organizing things, but I hope you will help me.
Mm-hmm.
This may be a better.
Being honest, accepting an issue if it exists,
right,
and trying to grow out of it.
Right.
That's a really good aspect. What you mentioned regarding budding relationships other than established relationships, also the negative impact of all these kinds of, like, you know, and in social media nowadays, there's like channels, there's stories, there's, you know, pretty much everything
this
ability for you to share on the spot the best and the amazing moments that
nobody
you're experiencing.
Nobody shares the worst moments, right?
Right. And what this can cause is for people who have budding relationships or people who are in the steps of getting into a relationship, it can cause them to form unrealistic expectations.
Indeed.
And how many times have we seen young people who want to get married, who, you know, want to get a job,
right,
who just want to form some kind of a connection, want to get into friendships. And they get into it with, like, really fantasies.
They develop those fantasies in their minds, seeing those unrealistic pictures and unrealistic stories and those unrealistic videos.
Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, obviously the effects it has later in a relationship.
It does have. You must know that you are responsible. Tomorrow will be answered. Tomorrow will be questioned. We are accountable for each and action we do. And tomorrow I'll be questioned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to Youth Station, and we are talking about people sharing their best image with others. We talked about how it can, people who don't even mean maybe to have like a negative impact on others can sometimes not be responsible for what they're sharing and cause unrealistic expectations for people or fracture relationships even. And so I think responsibility regarding what we share for it to be, you know, to have certain qualities, be knowledgeable, be you know exactly who we're sharing it to, what circle of friends we share what content with.
Indeed. Yeah. All that does have an impact. And I remember this was a joke once shared that there was this man who was saying to his wife, before our marriage, whenever I used to tell you, I have nothing except you, you used to get happy. And when in real life, you got to know this is true, now you're unhappy.
Uh-huh.
So really, this was a joke. Oh, wow. But like, this is about showing your real picture. You're trying to tell the person, literally, I don't have anything except you. That time, why am I happy before marriage? But when I realized the same thing after marriage, this real picture, this was not just a dialogue. This was a real thing. This was a real picture the person shared with me. Why I'm not ready to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So
And our talk is not so much that you don't need to share your good moments with your loved ones, with your family, with your friends, but to be aware and take responsibility for what you share.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Because
and to be honest with others.
Being honest is the key, because that's how you're going to help this relationship build, or others also trust you more. Because the way you show the something to the world, and you really are not that, you're actually developing unrealistic expectations from the people around you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes even women, like, you know, they go out in a way, they would spend hours on the mirror, and then they will go out and show a picture to the world that they really are not.
Yeah, and like a whole bunch, how many countries and how many youth have we seen that, you know, like 15-year-old, 14-year-old, 12-year-old girls who feel bad about themselves, who feel self-conscious because they go outside and they're like, how come all these people are just so beautiful,
so beautiful,
just doing nothing, and why am I not like that?
Right.
And so just
again,
presenting,
you're accountable.
Right,
again.
Presenting an unrealistic image of yourself in social media, in real life, can have a lot of negative consequences.
It does have. We do have that, and I have seen people who get you know, disappointed with why others have this or why I don't have this. That's why I'm saying we are accountable for each and every action that we do. We do have this in Surah Zalzala, that even the very minor action that you have not even considered, like it's even of a atom size, you will be responsible for that.
Yeah.
Like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is teaching us towards the end of this surah, that be very careful about your actions. Yeah, do not try to show people the picture that you really are not. Sometimes, not through images, we sometimes do that with speech as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like we also have this in Surah Saf that all the believers, do not tell others what you don't do yourself.
Right.
Because many scholars are of the belief that if you're going to tell people what you really don't believe yourself, it's really not going to have any impact on them.
Right, because eventually that person's going to look back and see, well, if this was really such a bad thing that this person was willing to advise me on it, how come they're doing it themselves?
Sometimes in practice, God forbid, if I'm not doing that, people may get a bad image of Islam itself. You know, yeah. I'm responsible not only just showing that picture, but also responsible of my actions, which are showing another picture of Islam.
Right, right. So because people can, nobody likes hypocrisy and feeling lied to.
Right. Right. So, yes, because this is being hypocrite, not being the one you are sharing, not being the one what you're showing to the world. And let's ask ourselves, why is it necessary? You know, why? Why I can't show my real picture? Why?
Mm-hmm. Because obviously everybody has some points of that they lack in. Nobody likes showing to other people that they're incomplete, that they have problems.
It's really not about showing your flaws to others, but it's about being honest. Sometimes, okay, if you're not showing your flaws to others, and we are not recommended to do that in Islam as well, but what is it that is keeping you from showing something that you don't have? Mm-hmm, that you really don't possess. Okay.
Right, like don't blowing yourself out of proportion.
Don't show your flaws, but at least don't show something that you really don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a lie.
Right, and so obviously some people don't understand this, but like when you post the status every single day that I went out and had coffee with who, and I went out and my grades came back perfect, and I had an amazing studying session, and my husband did this for me, and my wife did that for me, and my best friend did this for me. When you only share stuff like that and you're sharing it consistently, the message that you're giving to the people who are seeing that is that I'm living a perfect life.
Yes.
I'm living a happy life. Happy is good, but I'm living a perfect life.
Well,
there are no problems.
Allah says in the Holy Quran that I have created human being in constant struggle. So we got to be believing this, that we are always in constant struggle. There's no one who's living a perfect life. So don't believe in those stories.
Right.
Don't believe in those statuses. Don't believe in that social media stuff. And you yourself, don't show your flaws to others. But if it's a very important relationship, like a mutual relationship of getting married, say things that are important to say, be honest, but we are really not recommended to show our flaws.
And definitely not only show our...
It's not necessary to show something that we really don't have.
Yeah.
There's no need. Just ask yourself one question. Why do I need to show a picture that I'm not? After all, I do seek attention, but I will get that from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala if I am very honest.
Thank you for listening with us, and thank you, Sister Zainab, for your wise opinions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us. Until another episode of Youth Station, this was Zahra and
me, Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Congratulations to all our Muslim listeners on the occasion of 17th of Rabiul Awal, the birth anniversary of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today is in fact a day of double celebration. We also celebrate the birth anniversary of the sixth infallible successor of the Holy Prophet of Islam, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him. Congratulations to all our Muslim listeners on this very auspicious occasion.
in the limelight.
According to a new survey, Americans' support for the United Auto Workers Union strike against Ford, General Motors and Stellantis has ticked upwards since workers walked out recently. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The United Auto Workers president, Sean Fain, on Friday, 29th of September, announced additional work stoppages as the union continues its historic strike against the big three automakers, expanding the walkouts to a General Motors plant in Lansing, Michigan, and a Ford plant in Chicago, Illinois. Sean Fain said in a live video broadcast on Facebook that union leaders are still negotiating with the automakers, but that sadly, despite our willingness to bargain, Ford and General Motors have refused to make meaningful progress at the table. He said 7,000 Ford and General Motors workers at the two facilities will leave their posts in the coming days, which brings the total number of striking auto workers to 25,000. Or 17% of the United Auto Workers' roughly 146,000 members. Workers at the Chicago, Illinois plant make the Chevrolet Traverse and the Buick Enclave, while the Lansing, Michigan facility manufactures the Ford Explorer and the Lincoln Aviator. Sean Fain said a Lansing metal parts stamping plant will remain open. The United Auto Workers spared additional strikes in Stellantis. Sean Fain said the parent company of Chrysler, Dodge and Jeep and Ram has made progress on negotiations, including in cost of living adjustments and giving workers their right to strike. Sean Fain added, "We're excited about this momentum at Stellantis and hope that it continues." The Chicago, Illinois and the Lansing, Michigan moves are part of the United Auto Workers stand-up strike, a rhetorical nod at the sit-down strike by GM workers in Flint, Michigan in the 1930s. The strike began on 15th of September when nearly 13,000 auto workers halted their work at the big three assembly plants in Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio. A week later, another 5,600 workers at 38 General Motors and Stellantis-owned parts distribution centers in 20 states walked off their jobs. The activity marks the first United Auto Workers strike since auto workers walked out on General Motors in 2019. CNBC has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden joined United Auto Workers strikers recently in Michigan on the picket line, saying they saved the auto industry following the 2008 financial crisis and urged them to stick with it. The United Auto Workers' demands include a 36% pay increase across a four-year contract, annual cost of living adjustments, pension benefits for all employees, greater job security, restrictions on the use of temporary workers, and a four-day work week. Along with a wage hike, the union also wants the automakers to eliminate a two-tiered wage system adopted at the companies after the 2008 financial crisis. Wedbush Securities analyst Dan Ives said in a report, "The United Auto Workers strike is now getting nastier, with both sides digging in the trenches in what could be a long and drawn-out battle between the United Auto Workers and the Detroit auto stalwarts." Benjamin Salisbury, an analyst at Height Capital Markets, said in a report, "The United Auto Workers striking in weekly waves allows the union to inflict significant disruption while minimizing the number of workers not receiving paychecks." The Chicago and Lansing workers will now be paid through the United Auto Workers $825 million strike fund. For their part, the automakers say they have made reasonable counteroffers, while arguing that the United Auto Workers' wage and other demands would make it hard to compete with other car manufacturers. In a press conference on Friday, 29th of September, the chief executive officer of Ford, Jim Farley, accused Sean Fain of seeking media attention, saying the union boss has been a television more than Jake from State Farm. He said, if the United Auto Workers' goal is a record contract, they have already achieved this. He added, it is grossly irresponsible to escalate these strikes and hurt thousands of families. Sean Fain fired back at Jim Farley, quipping, like a good neighbor, we're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, a reference to State Farm's well-known corporate tagline. Sean Fain said, I don't know why Jim Farley is lying about the state of negotiations. It could be because he failed to show up for the bargaining this week, as he has for most of the past 10 weeks. If he were there, he'd know we gave Ford a comprehensive proposal and still haven't heard back. General Motors officials said on Friday that the United Auto Workers launched more strikes just for the headlines and claimed that the union hasn't responded to the company's latest counteroffer. American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. United Auto Workers President Sean Fain said recently that United Auto Workers is expanding strikes to 38 parts and distribution locations across 20 states, targeting General Motors and Stellantis. Sean Fain said in a Facebook Live comment, the union will not initiate additional strikes at Ford Motor as the company has proven it's serious about reaching a deal. Sean Fain said the union and Ford have made progress on issues including eliminating some wage tiers, reinstating cost of living adjustments, and improved profit sharing formula. He also said the union won the right to strike over plant closures during the term of the deal, as well as an immediate conversion of temporary or supplemental workers, those with at least 90 days of employment upon ratification. Ford said the company is working diligently with the United Auto Workers to reach a deal. But we still have significant gaps to close on key economic issues, Ford said in its statement. In the end, the issues are interconnected and must work within an overall agreement that supports our mutual success. The strikes at the General Motors and Stellantis parts suppliers will add roughly 5,600 auto workers, including roughly 3,500 employees at General Motors, to the United Auto Workers' ongoing strikes at the Detroit automakers. Roughly 12,700 United Auto Workers went on strike in recent days at the following locations. General Motors' mid-sized truck and full-size van plant in Wentzville, Missouri. Ford's Ranger's mid-sized pickup and Bronco SUV plant in Wayne, Michigan. And Stellantis' Jeep Wrangler and Gladiator plant in Toledo, Ohio. Parts distribution centers have been a major point of concern during these talks, especially at Stellantis. The automaker has proposed consolidating 10 Mopar parts and distribution centers, which are scattered across the country, into larger Amazon-like distribution centers. The new work stoppages, if prolonged, could cause significant disruption for dealers, which could in turn delay fixes for customers. Repair wait times have already been problematic due to recent supply chain issues.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
الله
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the representatives of the people from the provinces of Sistan and Baluchistan and Fars Khorasan. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 11, 2023. As I said, it is impossible for the officials of any country to carry out big, important tasks without the support of the people. The people must be behind them. The people must be alert, and the officials must not be neglectful. They must be awake. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "He who neglects the enemy will not be neglected by enemy." Nahjul Balagha, letter 62. If you fall asleep in your trench, it does not mean that your enemy has also fallen asleep in his trench. No, he may be awake. He may be watching you. He may take advantage of you being asleep. This is the fundamental issue. We must not be neglectful. We must be vigilant with regard to the enemy's plots. Does the enemy have plots? Yes, the enemy has plots. It has plans, and not just for us. Today, the U.S. has plans for the region, for Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Afghanistan, and the countries in the Persian Gulf, which are its old traditional friends. It has plans for countries.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Now, our focus is not on the plans that it has for them, but what plans does it have for us? We are not uninformed about them. We aren't uninformed. Our intelligence sources have informed us that the U.S. government has created an organization in the U.S. called the Crisis Group. What does it do? The mission of this group is to create crises in countries, including our country. The mission of this group is to create crises. They look for points that they think will spark a crisis in a country. They find these points and aggravate them. That is the mission of the crisis group in the U.S. They have gathered and thought about this. They have studied this and reached the conclusion that there are several crisis points in Iran that should be aggravated and activated. One point is ethnic differences, one is religious differences, and another is related to gender issues and women's issues. They want to aggravate these points in Iran and create crises. In this way, and through these crises, they want to harm our dear country.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi,
Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Palestinians in Gaza rallied on Saturday to mark the 23rd anniversary of the second Palestinian popular uprising, which is also known as the Al-Aqsa Intifada. The Al-Aqsa Intifada was sparked by the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds in September 2000 by then Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and his bodyguards. Palestinians have been holding protests in the eastern part of the Gaza Strip for the last 3 weeks, aiming to draw international attention to the continued Israeli human rights violations in Al-Quds. Hamas movement has warned the Israeli regime against violations at Al-Aqsa Mosque.
23 years have passed since the beginning of the Al-Aqsa Intifada, and we continue to fight for our holy places. The Israeli enemy must not provoke the Palestinian people. The equation has not changed, and Palestine remains an Islamic land. Today we assert that we will fight for our rights, and we will use all the forms of resistance, including armed resistance, to liberate Al-Quds and all of our land.
Protesters held placards denouncing the Israeli regime's desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They also denounced the international and Arab silence on the unabated Israeli crimes in Al-Quds.
Intifada means that there is determination for Palestinians to face the Israeli aggression and colonialization and settlement and achieve Palestinian rights for self-determination and right of return.
In recent weeks, the Israeli forces have increased their presence near the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, taking advantage of Jewish holidays.
The Intifada continues because of the ongoing Israeli aggression against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. We call on the international community to exert real pressure on the occupying Israeli regime to stop its grave violations against the Palestinian people.
Observers say the Israeli regime and its regional and international backers are responsible for the escalation of violence in Al-Quds.
23 years on, Palestinians say they are determined to free Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, no matter what sacrifices are required. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
In the past few presidential elections, the number one voter demand has been to address housing issues, which are suffered by one out of every four people in France. Many consider the European refugee crisis to be in its eighth year, adding to the national housing policy failure. The failure of Western sanctions on Russia has helped rent to explode over the last year by over 7%, or an entire monthly payment. Major demonstrations were held across the country to demand the government finally take action for adequate and stable shelter.
The government isn't proposing any solutions for these people with housing problems or who are completely homeless. These are people who work, who pay their taxes, and yet still find themselves on the streets. It's a big, big problem, but we don't expect anything from this government, given how they responded to the fair requests of the Yellow Vests.
Demonstrators demanded rent freezes and reductions, the taxing of real estate corporations and multiple homeowners, and the requisitioning of a record 3.2 million empty lodgings. However, historically, there have been few signs that the administration of Emmanuel Macron is interested in dialogue. The 2024 budget has just been released, but don't expect to see it debated in Parliament. President Macron has just used his usual executive decree to force through yet another austerity budget with billions in cuts to government services despite the record economic hardship.
Macron uses the 49.3 executive decree, so the people remain silent. People are scared, and that's now our biggest problem. This fear has led to inaction and political apathy, and that's even though I hear everyone around me relating how bad things are going for them and for society. I don't understand their inaction, but I do understand.